Good morning. Today is Tuesday, August the 18th. Fair day, not happening. Day before. Joining us this morning is Jana Valakovic from the UC Extension at Spruce Point. Yay, Jana.
Good morning.
That's about as exciting as... I just peeked out. I want everybody to know that was all she wrote. Oh, alrighty, Winston. Why do we say it?
Let's go with sour grapes. What is the origin of the term sour grapes?
Oh, this one's almost up your alley, isn't it?
Almost. Well, clearly, when you eat a sour grape, it makes you pucker. So it has to refer to how someone can be a bit on the grumpy side, shall we say, which maybe is a reflection of what their face looks like when they eat a sour grape.
The allusion is to the fable of the fox who tried to reach some grapes hanging up on a vine. When he was finally convinced that he could not get them, he turned away and said, "Well, they're sour anyway."
Ah.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, striving but not achieving. Okay, I got it. I suppose that's better than striving, achieving, and then being disappointed, huh?
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Either now way, I didn't want them anyway.
Yeah. Either way, you end up at the same spot. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. Oh. Any quick comments about what we're experiencing with the fires? You know, you tend to be out in the woods an awful lot and familiar with the territories as well as the fauna that's out there and the flora. What's your read? Is the fire kind of acting the way that you were anticipating? Do you sense that it's going to be, you know, just kind of run its course, so to speak?
Well, if we're referring to the fire that's off in the Trinity Alps, I mean, that fire lightning ignited, as many are during this time of year, is in an area that I understand hasn't received a lot of fire recently, but is getting close to burning into the old Megrim fire footprint, which should produce some pretty heavy, should be some heavy slash in there and even some heavy logs, big logs. So I know they're a little concerned about what will happen when and if it hits that line. But prior to the weekend, I believe it was burning and producing some good fire behavior conditions and probably some good fire effects on the existing vegetation. So consuming fault in that way, consuming small fuels and maybe not causing too much tree mortality. But things dried out over the weekend, and I'm not quite sure what it's been doing since then.
Now there,
so, you know, hats off to everyone who's working on it, and I know they're trying hard.
Comments have been made in the past that, you know, lightning-based fires were healthy for the forest management, for the ecosystem, things of that nature. Presuming that is just, or accepting it as fact, are the fires that we've been experiencing in the last little bit part of that continuum, or is the magnitude of what we've been experiencing so much larger because the naturally caused fires haven't been allowed to run their course that it really kind of compounds the situation?
Yeah, so that's a great question and one that a lot of people spend a lot of time thinking about. In my perspective, it falls more to the second part of your opinion, in that we have just so much fuel out there in the forested settings. And what that has done is that whenever you get an ignition, there's a lot of material to burn. There's a lot available. And so you end up with a more intense heat effect and a more intense effect on the living trees that, you know, we're hoping to sustain through time. Where we were historically, say, in 1850, where fire had been common and it was commonly kind of throughout the landscape, both by traditional burning practices as well as by lightning ignitions, there wasn't a lot of fuel to carry the fire. So it would skunk around a little bit, and it would, cause, you know, some materials to be consumed, but there wasn't a lot to carry the fire. And the frequency was much greater, so you would continue to see fires burn up what was available. now, because we have long intervals between ignitions, you have a lot of material to burn, and so you get just a much bigger, more intense fire, which is much harder to contain. So how we get to through that lag, through that, you know, that gap, and get back to a more normal fire regime, that's the uncomfortable part that we're in right now.
Uncomfortable because it's not known, because it's not natural, or because it's not PC or accepted by bureaucrats who, and firefighters too, who, you know, I mean, their genetic code is put out fire.
Well, uncomfortable for all of us. I mean, means more smoke in the air. It means, you know, more smoke in the air for longer time periods, which from a, you know, health quality perspective, we all know that smoke isn't great for us. But California was a smoky place prior to European settlement in the summer conditions. So uncomfortable in that fires are bigger. We tend to live more closer to the wildland environments, and so the potential for interaction with fire in our homes increases. You know, the smoke qualities, just the unpredictability comment, and we're just in a difficult period of transition. I think a lot about this topic, and I think we have the capacity to move to a more resilient condition where we can tolerate fire, use fire as a tool, and be in a position where we don't get so disrupted by an occurrence of fire. But that means that we have to do a lot of things to get to that place. You know, we have to harden our infrastructure. We have to harden our homes. We have to figure out better systems for evacuation. We have to figure out better systems for warning and alerts. And, you know, the list goes on. But until we manage this fuel backload, it's going to be difficult. And really, everybody has to work together. Fire is not just something that is for the fire professionals. It's really for all of us as people and all of the organizations and the government agencies that we work with, so that we're all working on this together. Because, you know, like, we don't do this for earthquakes, for example. We don't try and stop all earthquakes. We know that earthquakes are inevitable. We live, you know, in an environment where earthquakes are common, and so we build smarter and we build stronger. But when it comes to fire, we just kind of keep hoping that we'll be able to put every ignition out.
Yeah, it's just treated as a different critter, unfortunately. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic from the UC Extension. And Jana, considering some of the different challenges that are out there, I've often had kind of a question. If X number of acres were going to be burned in a year, is it better to have a series of small fires to burn that landmass, or one big one? Come out the same way at the end? Would it be different? Is there a difference?
And then when you use the word "it," what are you referring to?
Fire, the impacts of the fire.
Well, all of California is in a Mediterranean climate, which means that we get a wet winter and then a prolonged, long, hot, dry spring and summer, and now sometimes into the fall, without precipitation. And so all of that landscape received periodic and frequent fire on return intervals, some estimate around 10 years, sometimes a little less. And that's known through tree ring analysis, where you can basically look at the fire scars on old trees, and you can see the frequency of fire scars, and you can date those back many hundreds of years and get an estimate of, you know, how fire played over time. It's also looked at through sediment pores in old in ponds and high alpine lakes, where you can actually see ash layers, and you can see, you can actually evaluate each year, and you can see the frequency of ash layers. So a couple different ways to sort of look back at this question of fire frequency. So now that in California we've suppressed most ignitions for, you know, much of the last 100 years, there's this huge amount of fuel. And so, you know, whether you have an increase in fire in one location greater than another, it all needs some ability to remove some of that fuel. And we can either do it mechanically or we can do it with fire. And fire is often the cheapest treatment alternative that produces, in many respects, the best results. So the question is whether we do it in a prescribed way under very limited conditions with the, you know, control to produce the desired effect, or we do it in a more of a wildland setting where we're attempting to try and manage that wildland fire to produce the best effect possible and the least amount of impact. So I guess I'm going to answer it by saying that all of the landscapes that we live in California need some element of fire, and it's really about quantity and it's about quality of fire more than it's about where that's spatially directed. So, I mean, I think, you know, like my own place where I grew up in Humboldt County, I mean, it hasn't seen fire since the 1940s, and the fuel load is immense. So how do we get in front of that issue?
Is it, are people able to get out and do the cleanup? I can remember, and I'm sure you also, during the years, various policies and forest management practices in the national forest lands. You know, there was salvage harvesting at one point. There was regular harvesting, you know, the live trees, the rotational stuff, a couple hundred million board feet a year. That got squished down a long time ago. Are we changing our attitudes about forest that pristine may not be the best approach, and that managing, which means culling out, cleaning out, selective harvesting, whatever you want to call it, is something that is not only healthy for the forest, but it's also healthy for the community?
Yeah, is it enough? No, I don't think we're there yet, but are the conversations changing, and are people more willing to use fire as a tool or start to contemplate manage wildfire? And look at the aggregated benefits that come from that? I think the answer is generally yes, constrained by all kinds of things. I mean, we were making huge progress in terms of developing better prescriptions for private landowners to be able to manage their fuels and in a lower cost permitting setting. And more progress towards using prescribed fire, both in private and public land settings, then COVID hit. Right. And so, you know, funding for those efforts has waned a little bit this year. Also concern about, you know, more increase in smoke has been a concern just because of the theoretical compromise of people's overall health due to COVID. How do you put people in fire camps safely? You know, all these sort of associated issues.
But on the flip side, then you have the fires like we do in Los Angeles, you know, north of L.A. now, that are just ripping and tearing. And,
yeah,
you know, you're still putting the same amount of stuff in the air, and the folks that would be affected by it are probably more affected by it because of the anger of the fire.
Right. And the question is, how many crises can you manage at once?
Right, yeah.
And I think the fire issue is both an acute crisis and a long-term chronic issue. And so we don't let go of the acute crisis when you've got an ignition, but trying to deal with long-term chronic issues, you know, well, okay, maybe we can put that off for another year. In terms of the legislation that's moving forward in California this year, there's still a number of active fire bills, but, you know, the governor made it very clear that, it was going to be a limited, you know, set of policy changes that were going to be available this year, and fire was one of them. But, you know, there was huge momentum going into this year's legislative season pre-COVID to both fund a lot of this important work and redirect and redeploy people. And a lot of that has been put on the back burner.
And we'll talk about that when we come back. It's 8:30.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. If you see a down power line, stay away from it and keep others away. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond as well as PG&E. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at smokybear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic from the University of California Cooperative Extension. It's Spruce Point. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Baywood, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Redec. Jana, considering some of the different aspects that are out there, one of the things that has got to be either exciting or disturbing is when we have turnover at the state, you know, whether it's in your boss's boss, you know, as the head of the educational system, or whether it's in, under the Golden Dome. Different priorities, different efforts, different funding aspects. How much is there a whipsaw associated with what you're trying to accomplish because of the funding, or is there generally universal understanding that things are going in a certain direction and they can go even better? Let's just kind of get out of the way and let these folks do what they know how to do best.
That's a big open-ended question. I don't really know the answer to that question, but I do think, I mean, fresh ideas can bring in great opportunity, as well as, you know, folks that have been around for a while and been working on issues and really building coalitions to move ideas forward. So, I mean, it's some combination of the two. You know, when administrations change, you see all the department directors resign, and then they're, you know, left to come back if the next administration wants them to stay. But that's kind of the pro forma request.
Oh, so they will allegiances with the current, even if it's a Democrat replacing a Democrat, they still go through that procedure so the individual has a chance to reappoint?
Yeah, they still, and the expectation is that you're not necessarily going to be carried forward unless the administration has already given you nods that they like you. But, you know, you probably want to appoint your own team.
Sure.
Of, you know, the folks that you trust that maybe have your priorities in mind. So, you know, we're going through those adjustments as we're in a new administration with, you know, some new agency directors and new staff. And, you know, that's just the fact of life. And we're also seeing, you know, the baby boomers are generally retiring. And so there's a lot of new people coming up within the organizations, bringing fresh ideas, but also an opportunity for bringing them information because they may not have had as much life experience yet.
But now you look like mom or dad, right? Instead of being a peer.
That's me.
Yeah. So bring cookies.
Oh, that's me. No, that's not the case.
Okay. But it would seem, you know, and I suppose the fear of political appointments is, well, okay, worst case scenario, they appoint me. What do I know about that? But I'm buddies with whoever the elected was. And you know, that's just kind of the way the game gets played. That's my payback. Thank you very much. And now there I are with my own set of preconceived notions. Is there a lot of training of staff, of decision-making staff, of influence peddlers staff, rather than the folks on the ground, just to, you know, bring them up to speed so that when you're giving them information, they kind of know what's being said?
Well, I've never been on the inside to really know that. I observed from the outside one appointee, Deputy Secretary of Resources, the Resources Agency for Forests, really quick study, and watching her in this position over the last, I guess it's almost 2 years now, I mean, just meeting everyone she possibly can, looking for opportunity to triangulate on issues, coming up to speed, traveling throughout the state prior to Corona, really hitting the ground running hard and trying to learn a lot. I'm super impressed.
Doing it right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, clearly a woman with great ambition. No idea where she'll land, but...
And I suppose it's kind of sad that she would have to have ambition, or an individual would be cited as having ambition, rather than saying, this is the way the job has to get done.
Well,
because that's the way it gets done, and that others weren't doing the same thing, and that was kind of the routine. That was the expectation. That was how you got into a job. Was the first 6 months you were out in the field talking to people. It doesn't matter if it's forest or it could be budget management, whatever. I mean, that part doesn't matter. How cool that there was one appointed in that position, though.
I guess my comment is that I could see her in a variety of different posts throughout Sacramento, given her talent and her capacity to learn a whole lot of complicated information quickly.
Very cool. Well, and we'll talk about Sacramento a little bit more, because somebody was meeting with a former governor. And we'll talk about how come and where for when we come back. It's 8:41.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Yana. The discussion about Sacramento and some of the new players, and you know, some staff changes, some staff doesn't change, and obviously the electeds change also. Do you maintain relationships with some of the former electeds? Because obviously they still have juice, whether they're lobbyists now or they just have connections or their resources that others will reach out to kind of pick their brain, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. I'm in fairly regular communication with the former Cal Fire director, Ken Pinlott. We talk regularly. He's interesting. He's now actually running for supervisor in, I can't remember which Sierra Foothill County he's in. He made it through the first primary, and he's off to the races for the second. So that's been fun, keeping in contact with him. I also had an opportunity last year. I got a voicemail message. Actually, I just got one of my pink slips when I came into my office after being gone for a day. It says, Jerry Brown called. Please call. I'm like, well, Jerry Brown's a common name. So
it has a different connotation in California, however.
it does. And so I had this panic. Do I ask for the governor? Do I ask for Mr. Brown? Do I ask for Jerry? Who do I ask for? And, of course, Ann Gust answered the phone. And it was former Governor Jerry Brown, who I ended up doing a farm visit for at his request. And since then, we've kept in touch ever since. In fact, we talked this week, in fact, because he was worried about the red flag warnings and the weather conditions coming in, and trying to make sure he had his plan together and had taken care of all the things that he was on his to-do list to kind of further harden his home and get his water systems together. And he's now being a rural property owner on his family's ranch, and he and his wife built a newer home. There wasn't there's no retained home on the family property, and historic home, that is. And so they were learning about how to grow tomatoes and water systems and solar systems and then, of course, this issue of fire. So I had a lovely afternoon talking with them. Last year. And I think, you know, to your point, that issue of how do you let go, how do you move from being in charge to letting others run with it. especially after the number of years you've had in that post. It was a fun conversation.
So when you are talking with folks who have more of an urban background than a rural one, with some of the concerns that you have or some of the observations that you've made over the years, what are some of the stunners, the takeaways that you have and that are really kind of head scratchers? Do a lot of the folks in the legislature for California, do they get out into the undeveloped areas, into the small towns and get a sense, or is it really an urban focus when a lot of points are discussed?
I mean, I don't have that much experience in Sacramento. Certainly our electeds that represent the North Coast do get a fair bit of time in the ins and outs of our corners of the world. Whether they know it in the same way that we do, I don't truly know, but I make every opportunity to try and invite them or their staff out to get to see our part of the world and understand our issues to the best of my ability. And then someone like Governor Brown, I mean, he clearly had rural roots, so most of his upbringing was in the city, but they had this family ranch that he traveled to frequently. Now he's having the fun of being able to try and apply it and do it himself. I mean, I can't relate to the urban environment in the same way.
Right.
I'm definitely from the North Coast, and I probably ask equally awkward questions, urban environment and urban folks, because that's not my forte.
Yeah, yeah. What plants grow in the concrete canyon? Huh?
Even you can get food at 11:30 at night.
Yeah. We go outside and wet a line, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does cut both ways. Yeah. Oh boy. All righty. Well, hopefully next week or next time we won't have to talk about fire. Wouldn't that be a delight, huh?
That or power shutoffs or blackouts or any of that other stuff.
That all right. To normalcy and beyond. Thanks for coming by, Yana.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.